I'm doing it. I opted to do the keys first because we're basically up to our Mishnah, and I feel like we might as well. We have just a small piece before, and then we'll be doing the Gemara that we're doing in Iyun. So I felt it would just make more sense to do it this way rather than starting in Iyun and then going backwards, and it'll give you a little bit of advantage. I will warn you that I know that some of you, at least what I could overhear, preparing the next sugya, it is more complicated than it appears for many reasons, but we'll address some of them now, and then as we start to dig deeper tomorrow, you'll see why. The Mishnah on Chaf Gimel Ma'al states, Marchikin es ha-shovach min ha'ir chamishim ama. If you want to have a coop, it's a dove coop. I actually seen that the Tinek is now discussing whether or not we can allow chickens, whether you can have backyard chickens, actually. It's now an issue that's been raised. It's been banned a long time. So in case you or I are interested in that, considering having chickens, so that the possibility is opening itself up again, or sure, your in-laws as well. You don't think so? So, what's that?
Chickens?
Chickens. No? Okay. Fine.
They have a bird already.
Okay. Yeah, but they're not going to eat that bird. And it's not going to lay eggs for them. So, anyway, the shovach here is obviously not a chicken coop. It's a dove coat, we might call it, because I don't think chickens fly. Do they fly? But anyway, it's birds that fly. They're doves. And the concern is that they're going to, this is harfakas nezikin, in this case, shkenim, they're going to eat from other people's stuff. So you have to be marchikin as a shovach min ha'ir chamishim ama. You have to keep the shovach away from the city, or the way the Menuchei Yosef puts it, away from everybody else's gardens in the city. You can be in the city, but it has to be 50 amos of distance away from other people's stuff in the city. And v'lo yasa adam shovach betol shalom, alim ken yishlom chamish ama al ama l'choruach. The way Tosus reads this, and Rashi would probably agree, if you're going to have a shovach, let's say, in your field. We're not assuming right now that somebody's got a shovach in the air with 50 amos around. Imagine it's New York City. It's not likely you're going to be wealthy enough to own enough real estate around your dove coats in order to have your 50 amos. So if you have a field in the middle of nowhere, you have to have 50 amos in every direction. Rabbi Huda Omer, beis arbas korin melo sheger hayona. You need four korin, an area for korin, the distance of sheger hayona. What does sheger mean?
Descend.
So apparently, if you would, it's a big discussion in the Rishonim about whether sheger here is going to be what the Gemara also refers to as mesha chayit. In other words, does that mean, are there two things here or three things here? In other words, the Gemara is going to have how far a bird goes to eat, how far a bird flies, and then the question is, malo sheger hayona, is that supposed to be mesha chayit? In which case you have a problem, as the Rashba points out, because there's a stira, because the amounts are not the same, certainly. Or is there a sort of a third category in between, malo sheger hayona? But just, even though we often gloss over these things, how big is Beis Arbas Koren? Most of you probably learn like the classic yeshiva way, which is, it's a shir. 50 amos, you have an idea. How much is 50 amos? Give me an amount.
100 feet.
Okay, that's on the long end. Let's say 85 feet or so, somewhere between 75 and 100 feet. So let's call it 87 and a half feet, to take the average. 21 inches an amos. It's in that ballpark. How big is a Beis Arbas Koren? There is maybe a discussion in Rishonim as well, whether it means Arbas Koren in every direction or the total area of Arbas Koren. But it doesn't really matter for our purposes. At least you have an idea. Like, why do I ask this question? Not because I plan on having doves, but because how big a machlokas is this? Is this that one Tana says, you need 50 feet, and one sentence says you need 52 feet? Or is this like one Tana says you need 50 feet, and the other one says you need 400 feet? Because one of them is a machlokas in detail. The other one is a machlokas in conceptually what's required. As Tosfos would claim, there's no machlokas in Metzias here. They both agree. Whether what is the distance in which they generally eat, or they agree, right? They agree to distance generally eat, and they agree on the distance they generally, what malo sheger hayona is, and they're only arguing on the level of nesek. They might be arguing about whether the bird truly eats in that, but the argument here is not about what malo sheger hayona is, as Tosfos points out. So what is it, Beis Arbas Koren? I've stole for you enough time for you to tell me. How much is a Beis Arbas Koren? Any thoughts? So firstly, how much is a kor? 4 korin, so how much is a kor? Kor is 30 sa'ah. How much is a sa'ah? There are gemaras like this, you know, they chain, okay, but what's this, what's the next term? But here you should know what a sa'ah is. That should be your baseline. Because what is a base sa'ah? The answer is the area of the Mishkan. What was the area of the Chatzar of the Mishkan? If you don't know that, you know, you're lucky that I'm not my Rebbe, Rabbi Dulitz Zichron al-Bracha, who was Nifter, you know, during the break, because if I were Rabbi Dulitz, I would excoriate you. You know, I heard last night, I attended kind of a Shloshim like thing. It was a little bit open mic, although it wasn't open mic, at least on this, but the stories were brought back memories, and Rabbi Dulitz was really, he was a one of a kind. He was bigger than life and a personality. It'd be nice if we had more personalities like that today, but. So anyway, how much is the area of the Mishkan, the Chatzar Mishkan, in Chumash? No, but at least you can copy yourself. That's the area of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. So, okay, that's the, you know, the Heichal, yes?
I want to say 50 by 40.
No. It's 50 by 100. It's 50 by 100. And and that's the area of a Beis HaSayim, which means the Beis HaSayim is 50 by 50. It's 2,500 square amos. So a kor then is 30 times 2,500 is 75,000 square amos. And four of, a better, let me put, give you a different gauge, although it won't help you here. When you learn Erev in a Beis HaSayim, which is 50 by 100, the square, if it's a square, it's 70 and two-thirds and shirayim, is the way you put it. It's about 70.71 is the square root of 2,500. So you realize immediately that's a single sa'ah. You're talking about four korim is 120 sa'ah. So let's just imagine 11 by 11 approximately. 11 beis sa'ah by 11 beis sa'ahs. And if a beis sa'ah is about 70 amos by 70 amos, so you're talking about 770 by 770 amos. So that's more along the lines, maybe not of 50 versus 400. It's a huge difference. And that's if you assume that it's the middle point of four korim. Some Rishonim say that, no, it's based on baris korim in each direction, which means, I mean, that's, you know, ginormous compared to this. It isn't, however, the shear in the Gemara. Like, let's do a quick calculation there. 700 amos, we said, you know, by seven... Is that correct? You're the mathematician. He's a mathematician, not an arithmetician. Yeah, I know. I always said it in mathematics and arithmetic. So if it's 11 by 11, let's say, so it's about 770 amos, or 770 amos. Even if you assumed it were in each direction, so maybe it would be twice that, it's still going to be, well, it's not going to be, how many will be, let's say with 20, let's say it's like a grid of nine, four in each direction, 2,100 amos, right? 2,100 amos is just over a mil. A mil is 2,000 amos. What is the shear in the Gemara of Nesha Chayat of how far the bird actually flies? Was it 3 mil or 3 parsa? I don't remember, but yes. 4 mil. 4 mil, which is... because I forget how many risim, which is not a typical shear, but Tosis points out that Gemara gives the shear whichever it wants. Parsos, milin, and risim. So Tosis, four milin is 30 risim, 7.5 ris per mil. So 4 milin is much, much larger than the shear of the Lo Sheger Hayon. So that's the question. Are the three shear or is there some type of machlokas? Okay, bottom line is Rabbi Yehuda requires a much larger shear, and it's either because he believes that the birds eat in a greater zone, or do the birds do nezek even if they don't eat, but it's not really clear why that would be so. Okay, so bottom line is you have to keep your doves away. Now, this is for the protection not of the doves, but for the protection of the produce. But here is where it gets interesting. And this sugya, by the way, appears exactly like it does, but inverted. It's the last Gemara Perek Meruba, the seventh Perek, and not surprising, because you have a Mishnah here, which gives a shear 50 amma, leave aside Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And yet the last Mishnah in Perek Meruba, the seventh Perek of Bava Kamma, says that in person nishvin leyonim, ela im kein hirfik bin ayishuv shloshim ris, which the Gemara quotes here. So the Gemara does the exact same thing there as it does here, but it just inverts everything. So the Gemara says, chamishim amma v'tzulo, v'raminhu, Ein person nishbin leyonim el imkein hayarachuf ben ayisuf yishuf shloshim ris. It's got to be 30 ris, 4 mil, away from the yishuv. And yet our Mishnah says that the birds seemingly go 50 amos. That's a much, much shorter shear. Now let me ask you a question. What is the yishuv? What does that mean here? What does it usually mean? Settlement. So that'd be the city, presumably, right, where people live. So the Gemara Abaya answers, Amar Abaya, Meshet Shayatuba, but Ukresaihu Becham Shim Amsa Malya. The birds can fly long range, but within the first 50 amos, they can find enough. If they're just looking to eat, they'll go 50 amos, and they'll find enough worms and enough whatever they're going to eat within the 50 amos, seeds, worms, etc. But they might go on a journey to fly for whatever reason. Okay, and then how far will the doves go? These doves, at least, they obviously weren't messenger pigeons who went much further. How far will the doves go? The answer is they will go 4 mil, which is about, well, the way it's given in the Gemara, let's call it approximately 4 kilometers. It's a complicated because, as one of you pointed out, somebody pointed out last semester, or I think maybe I pointed out, the mil is actually, scholars at least claim it's actually the Roman mile, which would make a lot of sense, but that's more than 2,000. It's short of the contemporary mile, I guess the British mile, but it is, it's close to it. It's probably high 4,000 feet, which that doesn't really fit with the mil being 2,000. I don't know what the solution to that problem is, but for Tchum purposes, certainly that's not a problem because the shear for Tchum is 2,000 amos. Whether that's really a mil or not is irrelevant. Okay. So now the Gemara says that, so that's how Abaye resolved it. But now the Gemara says, really, they're too low? V'atanya over yishuv afil me'emel lo yifros. So this is a very, this Gemara really trips up the Rishonim. There's the Tosos, it's one of the longer Tosos on the page, but it's really, really difficult to read. It's a little easier to read the version of Baba Kama, but even there requires some explanation. The Gemara seems to be asking an Abaye. Right? Abaye proposed that 30 ris what do they call that with planes? The range, what it's called? The flying range or something when you read the thing. That's how far a plane can fly on a tank of gas. There's some type of a term for it. I don't know if it's range or something. But if you're bored on the airplane when they're taking off and you don't have your safer with you, you take out the card and it tells you about this particular jet and what it's how far it can fly. So Abaye said that the range was 30 ris, and now the Gemara quotes a braisa that says v'yishuv afilu me'a mil lo yifros. So the question is, okay, so if Abaye is wrong, okay, but it's a problem anyway between the Mishnah in Bava Kama that says Shloshim Ris and the Braisa that says Me'ama. But to make matters worse, as Tosas points out, and this you won't see in the Gemara, if you read the Tosefta from which this Braisa is taken in Bava Kama, so the Tosefta itself presents the shear of Shloshim Ris. You can see Tosas quotes it. It's on the fourth Y of the widest lines in Tosas. Tachi Tani B'Tosefta, the Meruba in Parsa Nishba L'Yodol Mekein Hirchuk Men Ayishav Shloshim Ris. So what do you mean? The price itself doesn't make any sense. So the problem isn't with Abaye, the problem is with the price. And so I'm not going to go through the details now, but the Rishonim talk about what was the Gemara's Havamina in terms of reading this price. What did they think in the first place before you're asking Akasha against Abaye? The Gemara's ultimate answer is going to be, let's say if you take the following. Rav Yosef Amar be Yishuv Krumin. That when you're in a Yishuv Krumin, not a Yishuv of a city, you don't want it to go to the city where people have stuff. 30 ris is enough. But if you're talking about a place where there is a Yishuv Krumin, where it can sort of fly with pit stops, it can stop over in these places, then the range for the pigeons or the doves is much, much further. And therefore, if, let's say I'm 60 ris from the city, but 30 ris between us, equidistant between us and the city, there's a yishuv of Krumim, so the birds will fly in the Krumim, they'll find a place to rest there, and then they will go on and fly further. That's what the Gemara's Teretz is, and then there's an alternative, but it's the same principle in terms of approaching the answer, which is Rabba Amar B'Yishuv Shovachim. They know that you actually have dovecotes in the middle. exactly the way I described the Kramim. So instead, 30 risks from where I am, where I want to put my doves, are more dove coats, and then from there it's 30 risks to the city. So the Gemara immediately says, "V'tepek le'mishum shuvachem gufayim." No, in other words, one more point that I didn't say. Remember here that the Gemara's reversed the question. In fact, why are you not allowed to spread out? I should have said this. I'm sorry. This is a given, but that's my mistake. Why is it that you're not allowed to spread out nets? Shimon? Yeah. In other words, it's not about protecting the crops. It's that the doves. It's a form of gezel, maybe gezel d'rabbanan, because the doves may not really be your doves. They just nest in your thing, but they're kind of wild. So there's a issa d'rabbanan of gezel. So I can't set up the nets because I'm going to catch the doves. Now, for the purposes of how far do the doves fly, it doesn't really matter whether the concern is eating your crops or stealing your doves. It doesn't make a difference. But because we're now explaining where I can't set up nets because I'm stealing someone's doves, so if I'm 30 risks away from shovachim, I said it wrong, not setting up dove cuts, I'm setting up nets 30 risks away from shovachim, which are 30 risks away from the city, and I'm not allowed to do that because the birds could fly from the city to the shovach, and then from the shovach to my nets. So the Gemara asks immediately, "V'tepek le'mishum shovachem gufayim." In other words, forget the pigeons that are in the doves that are in the city, the doves that are in the dove coat in between are also going to be a problem. So the Gemara answers, "Ibayis ema bidei, vibayis ema dekenani, vibayis ema dehefker." D-Day requires no explanation. I mean, if it's my doves there, so if I catch my own doves, that's not a problem. If it is Pefker, that's also not a problem. Let's say no one owns that Shovach in between. And the only question is, what question of Kenani? So firstly, Kenani is a census term. It should be probably Goy or Nachrei, I didn't check, but that's what it is always. And the Rishonim here say that even according to the Mount Amar, that Gezo Kenani is Usser. So here, because it's only Gezel Meidak Yashalem, it's not real Gezel, they weren't Gozer. It's a longer discussion when I'm not going to have now. There's a broader ethics question here, obviously. How does one relate to this particular distinction? If you're very interested, you can find either you go directly to the Tinek Beis Medrash website, or it's on my website as well. Somewhere under the Shirim, not the regular, not the Bava Basra, but other Shirim, I gave Shir on this topic. In the Beis Medrash of Tinek during the break, on dealing with some of these issues. So you, if you're interested, you can take up, listen to that. But I'm not going to talk about it now. But that this would be another example. But what Rishonim do say here is that only because it's Gezel Mishon Darkei Shalom. We certainly paskin when it comes to Gezel. Gezel Kanani is Asur, and the Pashtus is Asur Midaraisa, Gezel Nachri. And so only here because it's really not Gezel. It's just Gezel Midarkei Shalom. So they weren't Gozer. Okay. Now, there is another approach in Rishonim to reading this Gemara. It's very difficult in terms of the language. But the way the Rashba quotes this, it really is, it's Tosfos, even though he has a different Tosfos, it's not the way he has Tosfos. The Tosfos' approach and a number of other Rishonim say that the Gemara's maskana, that the question of the Gemara in the end actually was not about the flying range of the bird in terms of the nets, but actually has to do with how far the birds eat. And you can take a look at Tosfos, but he understands that in the Havamina of the Gemara, it was that the birds would actually eat further than even the Hamishim Amah. The problem, you can see what motivates Tosfos to do that. That's the Tosfos I refer to as Dibur Maskal Vatanya. What is interesting, what the Rashba points out very astutely, perhaps obviously, is that what's problematic about that assumption is that when the Gemara asks the question, it says, Umeshit Shloshim Ris V'tu Lo, suggests that the only question was about the flying range of the bird, not about the eating range of the bird. In other words, if the Gemara's question were really rooted in the idea that the birds will actually eat further than 50 amos away, and that's related to somehow how they're going to fly and fly and fly, So then the Gemara asked, formulated the question the wrong way, right? The way the Gemara, the structure of the Gemara is, Mishnah says 50 amos, Braisa says 30 ris, Gemara says there's a difference between eating range and flying range. Then the Gemara turns and says, but is that really true about the flying range? Isn't it even longer? So according to the approach of Tosis, the Gemara should really ask, and the eating range is only 50? You know, the answer may be the answer, may be the same answer regardless of the end, but in terms of what the Gemara's question was, it would seem that the Rashba is correct in that regard. All right. Now, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Beisarba Korin Vechule. Why is the word Vechule there? Because the Gemara is not commenting on Rabbi Yehuda's statement. The Gemara is commenting on the last line of the Mishnah, why they didn't put that in the Piskat, I don't know. It should have said Vimlocho Afilu Beisrova Reu Becheskasa, which I didn't read. The last line of the Mishnah, now I have read it. The Mishnah says the following. If I buy Tal's Shovach, and it turns out that between Benji and Shui's property right next to him, there isn't 50 amos from the Shovach in each direction. Now Benji says, Tal moves away, he can't be contacted. And Benji says to me, Rebbe, please move your Shovach because your birds pose a threat to my crops. And I can say, Tal obviously had the right to put it there because he must have made a deal with the two of you to make an arrangement to buy you off or, you know, to come to some agreement. And therefore, I bought it from him. I bought, you know, all the rights, privileges entailed therein. So that's what the Mishnah said. So now the Gemara comments, Amar Papa Vitamer of Zvid, Zoso Meres, Toanim Lokeach, Toanim Leorish. First is the comment about the word Toanim. When we say Toanim Le, normally when you walk into Basin, so if Rami and Josh have a din Torah and they come in front of me, I don't coach them. I don't help them. I say, hey, Rami, what is your claim against Josh? Rami, you present it yourself. You have to present it, Josh. You present the response. However, in some cases, we say that Toanim Le. We assist somebody. We help them by being towing on their behalf things that they can't be towing. It's based upon, Rashi quotes this in several places, I don't know if the Gemara says it befeirish, it's based upon the Pasuk in Mishlei, Tzach Picha Le'ilein. When someone is a mute, you have to help them talk. Meaning, when someone is not able to advance a taina for a particular reason through no fault of their own, Beis Din has the obligation, in effect, to lay that taina, claim that taina for them. So, by means of example, supposing that Shimi has a shtar against me that I owe him $100. If I say to Shimi, I paid you back $100, you did something else to me that should cancel it, that's very nice, that Beis Din will tell me to go pay up unless I approve. Suppose I say to Shimi, wait, that shtar you forged. It's a mezuyah. So the halacha is that midrabanan, they require him to be mekayim the shtar, to bring proof that the signatures are valid signatures. That's all. If we have, the Beis Din has other signatures on file that match them with the same people, that's good enough. But what happens if Shimi lends money to a particular fellow, I don't know, to Ploni Almoni, and Ploni Almoni dies? And now, Ploni Almoni's estate, which is inherited, let's say there's karka, it's inherited by Ploni Almoni's children. And Ploni Almoni's children now have to pay back out of their father's estate the debt. But Ploni Almoni's children cannot totally toin mezuyah against Shimi and Ishtar. Why? Because Ploni Almoni himself knows whether he did or didn't lend the money to Shimi, borrow the money from Shimi, and he knows whether that shtar is mezuyah or not. Regardless of whether he's telling the truth or not, he knows. His children have no way of knowing that. How are they supposed to know? They have no idea whether the father borrowed the money. In that case, we are toying on behalf of the Yorshim, mezuyah, and you have to be Mekayim the shtar. That's called Toanim Leorish, an example. But that's Psafi Chalilein. Because it's not that if he loaned the money to me and he's coming to bear for me, well, I presumably should know that it's mezuyah, and I should say, hey, that's a forged shtar. But the Yorshim of Ploni Almoni have no idea what the Ploni Almoni, it's not reasonable to expect them to do that. The other case, which you know the Gemara is going to quote from later in the Masechta, in the third parak, is that Chazaka Cheska Shaloshanim requires a taina. We don't believe in halacha and squatter's rights, meaning squatting does not create possession. Squatting creates a presumption of possession. Meaning, if I've been living on the land 3 years and you haven't said a word, And then you come and say, what are you doing with my land? And I say, because I bought it from you, and it's been 3 years, you haven't said a word, so I lost the shahr, because I figured there was never going to be an issue anymore. So then I win with that. But if you come to me and say, what are you doing with my land? And I say, well, I've been living here 3 years, and you never objected. And you say to me, yeah, but so what? I didn't sell you the land. So the halacha is that the person who, that the Baalim Rishonim win. Because a chazaka requires taina. Kol taina she'enima, chazaka she'enima taina is not a chazaka. It has to be, chazak cheska shalashanim is proof. It's not a means of transfer itself. It's just an indication that there was some type of a kinyan and a transfer made. So the Gemara, so again, I can't, he comes to me and says, you've been on my, you're on my karka, and I say, well, I've been living here 3 years. Beis Din doesn't suggest to me, and you bought it from him, right? No, he has to be towing himself. However, he would be dealing with Yorshim, a person inherits land from his father, and his father died. He has no way of knowing whether his father bought the land, but he can say, my father lived on this land for 3 years. I don't know whether he bought it or not. He never told me anything. I didn't inherit a shtar on the land, but it's... I have no idea. So Beis Din will be towing on my behalf and say for me that you can be towing that fact that you, maybe this person's father would have said, yes, I bought it, but he's not here. So the father himself has to advance that taina. We don't do it for him, but the Yoresh does not. So the Gemara says, Amar Papa Yitin Rosvid Zoso Meres Tonim Lokeach Vatonim Yoresh. The language is not precise. The Mishnah, our Mishnah, if he was making the statement on our Mishnah, does hold Toanim L'Lokeach, it doesn't hold Toanim L'Yoresh, because it's not talking about a Yoresh. It just says, if I bought the field from Tal, or let's say I bought the field from Tal, and there's no 50 amos between the Shovach and Shui or Benji, or in Benji's property, I'm a Lokeach. I don't know whether Tal bought, you know, an easement of some kind from the two of them, but we'll assume that he did, because Tal, had he been towing that, and assuming this arrangement was there 3 years, Tal is going to win, so Beis Din will do that on my behalf as well. So you see from the Mishnah, the Imlakacho, Afil Beis Rova. Right, how much is a Beis Rova? Okay, a Rova of what? Rova Hakav. That's the shear it's usually used. How much is a Rova Hakav? This you should also take to heart, make sure you know this. How many Kavan in a saw? How many Lugan in a Kav? And how many Revius is in a Lug? That's an easy one, yes. Okay, so Revius Halug, which is the sheer Revius, is 1/4 of 1/4 of 1/6 of 1/30 of a kor. Nobody ever calculates kor. We do talk about saw. Right. So if you assume, by the way, that a revius is 3 ounces, so I'm poor Yoni. I'm going to look every time I have a math question, I'm looking at him, but he just knows theory. For the rest of it, you take a calculator. But 1/4 of 1/4 is 1/16, and of 1/6 is 1/96. So a revius is 1/96 of a sa'ah, which means there are 288 ounces in a sa'a and 40 sa'a in a mikvah. You can do the calculation that way. 40, approximately. You pick what your shear revius, but 40 times 288 or so. And I don't know exactly, but it's something like 1152 or something. So that's how many ounces. And how many gallons is that? It's about not even 10 gallons. Okay. Mind you, try squeezing yourself into that. I don't know. Does that work? You got to figure that out. There's another way of doing it, not for now. Bottom line is that a rova hakav is a 1/24 of a sa'ah. If a sa'ah is 2,500, a base sa'ah is 2,500 square amas, then let's say a 1/24 of that is 100 square amas, which is about 10 amas by 10 amas. If you put the shovach in the center, you have 5 amas in every direction, not 50. Boy, Tal, your birds must have been having a feast on their stuff. So that's the bottom line. So the Mishnah says, basically, Harei B'chaskasa, which is Toan in L'Lokeh, because the buyer doesn't know whether or not he bought it. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara just says, L'Yoresh Tanina, We have another. Now, this it's not really a question on Mishnah, but we have another Mishnah that tells us that we're toanim liyoresh habami shemirusha in etzarach taina. That's the Mishnah in third parak. That the yoresh doesn't have to say my father bought it from you. He can just assume that his father bought it from him. So the Gemara says lokeach et shrichalei. No, you need this Mishnah to teach you that toanim lokeach. The Gemara says lokeach nami tanina. Lokach and cheska sabatim as well. Lokach chatzer bazis and gazus teros. I buy a chatzer. And sticking out of the chatzer into the Rishas HaRabim are these beams that stick out for whatever purposes. I want to use them. Harei zo b'cheskasa. We assume that in all likelihood, one of two things happens. Either that land underneath the Zizim and Gezus Taros belongs to me. I wanted beams jutting out for whatever reason. Stability, I'm not sure what I would have done with them, what I put on them. But I'm not allowed to have them stick out into the Rishas HaRabim. And therefore, what did I do? I built my wall further in, not at the property line. And underneath it, these didn't exist. So I'm like, so either that, or I bought an easement. Yes, Benjamin.
I saw somewhere that it was
balcony. Yes, one of them is. Is Zizim or not? Because this throws a balcony. So that's certainly, I'm thinking at the Zizim. Like, I don't know why anybody would hang stuff there. It's on the outside. People are going to take it. But it might be for stability, because you want the beam just to stick out. In fact, if you look in Tainus, there's one of the Hanina ben Dosa miracle stories, is the woman whose beam were too short when they were trying to build a house. So he made a miracle, and the beams even stuck out, extended beyond the wall. So if you buy somebody's chatzer, and there are zizim and gzustaros, the assumption is that it was there by right. So why did he eat our mishnah? Just the Gemara says tzricha. The eid hashbin and hasam gabe rishas harabin, Emor konis l'tol shalahu, inami achule achu b'nei rishas harabim gabei. Now, how does the b'nei rishas harabim be mochal? That's a really tricky thing to do. So Tosis explains, you had the shiva tovei ha'ir, the town council, that was in effect mochal on, basically mochal sold on their behalf. And the reason there it's more likely they'll do it, as Tosis points out, is because what does anybody lose? Nobody loses almost anything. Like, the loss to every individual is trivial. Right, I have to duck a little bit, maybe, depending on where they exist. Truth, in most cases, they're going to be higher than anyway anybody's going to run into. So unless you're, to borrow the Mishnah of the Kamas, unless you're Rochev on a Gamal, right, that's the Mishnah in this parak is going to talk about how much you cut back the trees. So short of that, it's probably not going to be a problem, so the Shiva Tovei Ir can be Mochar to you, on the one hand. But by a Yachid, you know, Aval Hacha, lo, because by the Yachid, you know, there's real loss to him. The iashmin and hacha, the chayven the yachudu ema piyusei paisei. You can buy them off, right? Tal, gave Benji and Shui, you know, a few extra Benjamins, and they were happy. That's fine. So very appropriate for you, Benji. So that's why. But however, inami achubei achugabei. You guys were really nice to Tal. Avol rabim man piyusim man shavik. When it comes to the rabim, who's really going to do that? Now again, you can have Shiva Tovei Ir, but nonetheless, that's why the Gemara said you need both. And therefore, Ema Lo, you would have thought not, Sriha. Okay. Finally, Harehu Becheskasa, Cheskaso, Sa'avar Anacham and Amar Babravua, in Chazaka and Nizaka, and that Gemara, where was that Amoraic statement? Where did we encounter that first? It is elsewhere. There's no Masar Sashas on it, but my Bikias tells me that line, Amar Nachum Avua in Chazak Nizakin, is found elsewhere in Shas. Earlier on the other, that's why there's no Masoras Shas. Right? They didn't assume when you'd be learning this that there'd be winter break in between the two parts of Bikias. Okay, so the Gemara gives the same answer. Ramari Amar Bekusher, Rozvid Amar the Beis Hakise. In other words, the only time we say in Chazakal and Nizakin, and we're not going to talk about this, about Lucas or Rishonim, whether in chazaka, but there is if beferish where you can ikona such a thing, if the person agrees to it. In other words, does in chazaka mean mistama, the fact that that someone didn't protest is not evidence of that, or does it mean that even if you actually were masik with their permission, it still doesn't work? They can back out because they can say, "I thought I could bear it, but this is just impossible." So either way, so these two things are really awful things that nobody really wants to live with, but other kinds of nizakim, which are much, much less serious, people, there is such a thing as chazaka. Okay. Now on to the sugya that we will be doing in Iyun. Nipol hanimsa betol chamishim ama. What is a nipol? Yeah, fallen bird, a chick. I like both of those. Chick is the good is the correct translation. But the choice of nipple might suggest that it can't fly, which is what the Gemara is going to bring up to solve a problem. But anyway. So betocha mishimama reyo shobal ashova chutzmecha mishimama reyo shomoso. I have just a simple question here for you. What is this Mishnah doing here? Where does this Mishnah belong? Eila Mitzias? Yeah? It's talking about a lost object. A lost bird. What's it doing here? You're on the right track. Shimmy?
Now, once we started talking about one din of Shabbat, it goes to another one, the Mishnah does this sometimes.
Yes, but there's even something more that unites them. You were right. He's more specific. I want something more. Correct. Now, I'm not just doing that to have fun. There's actually a reason why I asked that question, because I think on a pshat level, there are certain difficult things in the Gemara that the Gemara, I'll say, gets right in the Maskana, but the Havamin is hard to understand. In other words, this Mishnah doesn't belong here. I forget which one of the Rishonim points it out. Maybe the Ritva says this. It's belongs in the name of Metzias. I actually didn't look back to see why is it here, but it's obviously it's here because it's birds, it's here because it's Shova, it's here because it's 50 Amma. Now, Nipul Aninsa Besoch Anishim Amma, Harehu Shabal HaShova. Why? On the most simple level.
It probably came from his bird cage.
I love that sentence. It probably came from his bird cage. Why? I generally like that sentence. I like, there was one word in particular I liked in that sentence because it's a crucial word in the entire sugya. You know what word that was?
Probably.
And that's not insignificant. I don't know if any of you, I doubt any of you have seen the Tosfos and the major issue that runs through the sugya, but why is it probably come from the Shovach?
Because they can only go so far since they can't fly yet.
Whoa, no. You're right, but you're in the Gemara's Maskana, and maybe you should realize that in the first place, but the Gemara clearly does not realize that in the first place. So in the absence of that piece of information, why? Because? Okay, let's see if I can pull this one out of my hat. I'm going to describe to you a person. They're bookish. They have, they wear, you know, wire glasses. They live in the United States. Their father is a, well, I'll, yeah, that's fine, okay, that's enough. Is this person more likely to be a librarian or a farmer? So I maybe I'm more off on the details, but you fell into the trap. I think Kahneman and talks about this and gives this example in Thinking Fast and Slow.
Bookish.
What's that?
The word bookish might
be. Exactly. But the point is, how many, you know, this is what you know about the person. How many farmers are there in the United States and how many librarians are there? The point is that if assuming there are 500,000 farmers and 20,000 librarians, giving you that information does not, I've given you a stereotype, does not actually mean it's more likely that the person is a librarian than a farmer. This is a crucial issue here, which is what actually really gives you information. In other words, if I tell you that a pigeon is within 50 amos of this particular thing, and you don't know, Shimmy, you don't know yet, Shimmy, that it can't fly. There's a pigeon here. What is the probability that it came from this dovecote? And what is the probability that it came from the, you know, a better way of doing it like this, you find a chicken, okay, and it's within 10 amos of a chicken coop in my backyard. Now, P.S. Around my property is a Tyson chicken factory, okay, you know, all these chickens. Which is more probable that it came from? But that's really the question I'm asking. So when you said probably, that's a crucial word, but why is it probably? So obviously it relates to, yes, Shimmy?
Maybe because it would be feeding within those 50 amos, so it makes sense to feed it.
That would be a very nice interpretation, which I think is probably the pshat, although it's not one that the Gemara seems explicitly to pick up upon. Right? In fact, the Gemara seems to reject that idea. The Gemara seems to go into the realm of the Dada. But I think that Pshat of the Mishnah is exactly what he says. That the reason why 50 Amos is because it's the feeding range of the bird. That creates the probability. Even though, and this is the crucial issue, even though, right, what I just described to you, Rami, is exactly the Rove and Kuro problem. Okay, so I'm gonna leave that there because we'll probably talk about that as we go through the sugya to talk about these kind of things. There's a really I assume none of you saw it. There's a really interesting Ramban at the end of the sugya, really really important Ramban, on a line that I'm sure many of you glossed over and didn't think about multiple possibilities, which is the third to last line on Chavdal and Manalef. I assume some of you maybe got there. I heard some of you talking about wine, so I assume you got there. But this is really, to put it in other terms, the difference between Karov the Muchach and Karov the Lo Muchach. In other words, when we have criteria, we spoke about this last semester, the Cheskas Mamon. The Cheskas Mamon, let's say, by not of a specific object, of a concrete object, but in the abstract, done alone. Right, let's say Rami, I claim Rami owes me money, I loaned him money, and Rami claims he paid me back. In the absence of proof, who's going to win? Rami. Why? Because I'm Otsi Mechavel Haraya. He has the Cheskas Mamon. So we talked about this. Cheskas Mamon there is a machria, or there's a better term for it. It's a, what's the term? What? No, I don't want it. It's not a mevayer, is exactly the point. It's a hanhaga. It's not a mevayer. What is a hanhaga? It means you got to make a decision one way or the other. You got to make a decision one way or the other because you have choice A, choice B. You get to a fork in the road. You know what Yogi Berra once said? My friend Rabbi Berkowitz told me this. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. That's not an option. You come to a fork in the road, you got to choose one or the other. So sometimes you choose one because it makes more sense. Sometimes you choose one because you have to choose one. That's just the way it is. That's the difference between hanhaga and a beer. Sometimes a karov is a hanhaga. Sometimes it's a beer. I have to engage in Simpson here because I don't want to talk about it anymore. We're just going to read the Gemara. But that already opens up a total way you have to read the Gemara differently when you just read it through the first time. You have to consider what the Gemara is doing. All right, so I will try to keep my mouth closed on that. Let's just move on. So the Mishnah says that if it's found betoch hamishim ama reishu bala shoba, chutz mechishu ama hareihu shumotso. This raises a question fairly that the Gemara asks. Obviously, it means that once it's outside of 50 amos, it's not presumed to be that of the shovah, either because it's outside the feeding range, so there's no reason to assume it necessarily came from that shovah, or because it's a medad, as the Gemara is going to ultimately suggest, that it's a fledgling. It can't actually, a hatchling, I should probably say. Fledgling probably means it's starting to fly. It's a hatchling, it can't fly, it's a medad, therefore it's not medad more than 50 amos. Okay. So then you have to ask, though, if you find it outside the 50 amos, fine, but what about, aren't there any other dovecotes somewhere, any shavachim somewhere? In other words, why is it just automatically assumed to be shamotso? That it doesn't belong to the bala shavach, I understand. So with that, you have to flesh out as well. Nimsa ben shnei shavachos, if it's found between two shavachos. Now, what does that mean? How far between the two? Is this within 50 amos of each? Or outside of 50 amos of both? That is a question you have to, the Gemara will not explicitly articulate that, but it will address that question. That's only if you assume it's the same Matthias as the first case, Medada. Like that. You see, according to Shimi's suggestion, you would have to assume it's within 50 amos, I think. Okay. But in the meantime, Karov lezeh shelo, Karov lezeh shelo, mech tzal mechna, shneim yachloko. Okay. So now the Gemara quotes a statement of Rabbi Chanina, Meimra. Amar Chanina, rov karov hochna acharov. You have a situation where following that which is closer would give you one conclusion, and following that which is the majority would give you another conclusion. you follow the rov. He says, "Afagav the ruba daraisa, the korva daraisa, filu hachi ruba adif." Even though both rov and korva daraisa, how do you know that korva is daraisa? That's easy. Egla rufa. How do you know that rov is daraisa? Maybe, yes, but the question is, we're not talking about that kind of rov. That kind of rov is called a rov at the isakaman, but we're talking about a rov at the leisakaman, a statistical rov, as opposed to a rov, I don't want to say it's not statistical, but it's right in front of you, right? So Rav Chanina says even a statistical rov, even a rov at the leisakaman. It's not that a rov at the leisakaman automatically has to be weaker than a rov at the isakaman, it's just that we have a clear makar, it would seem, the way the Gemara presents it. We have a clear marker of Acharabim Lahatos, which is Dayanim, which is a Ruba Deisa Kaman, the Gemara in Chulin, which I gave you, just to look at the beginning and end of the sugya. It's a really fun sugya. Explores how do you know Ruba Deisa Kaman. The Gemara in general wants to be Nayan Daslina Basa Ruba. Hadam Rabbanas Nebas Ruba. How do you know that we follow a rope? We all know that. We all assume that, but who says? You have any questions? Okay. So, Masiv Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks a very simple question. The Torah says, whichever city is closer. Presumably, you can have multiple cities. One is closer than the other. The one that's further, or a little further away, might have more people in it, but the Torah doesn't care. The Torah says just the closest city. So the Gemara's question and its answer are predicated upon a certain interesting assumption. And you know what that is. It's so obvious you probably didn't even think about it until you start to think about a bunch of halachas and egla rufa that don't make any sense in light of this. Tosis is kasha. Why does the Torah say you follow Karav?
Because it was most likely that the murderer came from that city.
Because it's a birur that he came from that city. So let me ask you a question. Why then would it be that if there are two cities, one is closer but has no base then, but the further one has a base then that will modate to the further one. See, if it were a hachra'a, if it were an haga, I understand. In other words, we've got to pick a city. So let's just pick the closest one. But if closeness is an indicator of where the murderer came from, or who was responsible for him being murdered by neglecting to accompany him to provide him hachnasas orachim, so then you'd think that it wouldn't make any sense. I understand if you tell me that you need a base in a city to bring an egla rufa, that's fine. But if the closest city has no base in, why are you going to make the next closest city that has the base in bring the egla rufa? It's not their responsibility. Okay, fine. Now, the question is particularly interesting because the Gemara is going to say that Rov, the Gemara's answer is Deleka. There's no city, in other words, this is the closest city, and any cities that are further have the same population. Now, you realize there's a reductio ad absurdum here, which the Gemara is about to ask. But in the meantime, the Gemara assumes what? That let's say the closest city were not the Rov. What would happen then? Based upon the Gemara's question, it's answer bidaleka. And even the answer to the next question, vasuchama.
Yeah, so then it would come from the larger city.
It would, I'm sorry, it...
The elders would be, the elders from the Beit Din would come from the larger city.
Which city would bring it? The Karav or the Rov?
The Rov.
So that happens to be the opinion of the Rambam. It left a number of Acharonim scratching their head. Tosfos Rid has a different opinion. You know which city brings it? No, that'd be against the Gemara. What? Neither. The Karov doesn't bring it because it probably didn't come from the Karov. The Rov doesn't bring it because the Torah says, Ayar Kroval Halal. I find that to be a difficult, but that's not, I think Pshat in the Gemara is like the Rambam. I don't know why. In other words, unless you want to reject outright the premise of the Gemara, that it's not about determining which city. And I don't want to say more on this because it's not, we're going to spend some time in the Rambam Shita in Egla Rufa, but not because I'm interested in Egla Rufa as much as the way he reads this Gemara and the Yukimta that he omits. But that is a machlokas Tosfos Rid in the Rambam. Whether or not, if the close to city is not the rove, whether the rove brings or whether nobody brings. Yes, Eli Melech. It's true.
So you have to say
that the Torah meant. Yeah, you're still making an ukimta anyway. The ukimta is that the Karov brings only if it has at least equal population to the other cities.
But okay? At least that's the main case. As in, it would seem that the mainstream case right here is that we go by the road. And so the pasuk is, it's an odd case.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Fine. In other words, you're saying of all the Egla Rufas, since most of the time it's going to follow Rov, not a Karov, you mentioned Karov. Whereas if you only bring in a Rufa when it's a Karov and the Rov, the Torah, or at least there is no other Rov, it could be equal, equal. Okay, fine.
There are times when we narrow the scope of the Pasuk, but this is also the main, this is the Mahra.
Right, it happened to be this is narrowing the scope of the Pasuk tremendously. Now, so the Gemara then asks a question. The Gemara says, "V'leizel b'aser ruba da'alma." Well, once you can do that, why don't you just say? And this is really complicated. We're not going to talk about this. What does ruba da'alma mean? There are two ways of reading this. The rest of the world, which means, in all probability, the murderer didn't come from the closest city, which then is basically done away with the pasuk of Egla Rufa, unless you're like the Rambam, which is ironic because this havamina would almost certainly prove that the Rambam is correct, except for the Rambam omits the Ukimta here. The Yosheves Bein Haharim. That's the Gemara's answer to Yosheves Bein Haharim. So what does the Yosheves Bein Haharim mean? And this is interesting too. Shimmy?
Like the city is in a remote location, so unless you were from the city, it wouldn't really make sense for you to have gotten there.
Correct. So in other words, the cities in which we're choosing between are all Bein Haharim. People don't go there. Right. So, therefore, you can say with relative certitude the murderer did not come from some city, even if it's a big city, a metropolis, 100 miles away. Nobody goes to the sleepy little valley, region, and therefore the murderer must have come from one of the cities in this region. And therefore, remember, mobility then certainly was not what it is today. Right? Back in the day, it was unlikely you would go to Wyoming to kill your girlfriend. Today, you can have all such things. So the bottom line is that only by Yosheves Bein Haharim does the Gemara say. Now the Rambam omits this ukimta, the Yosheves Bein Haharim. So and the truth is, even if you were to put this aside, let's talk about an area that we can wall off Bein Haharim. Which, again, I guess the answer that Tosas Rid makes sense, but according to the Rambam. Who brings?
The biggest city.
It's always going to be the biggest city within a region. Unless they're shot in, and then you use a car. It's very strange that that's how the Torah chooses to delineate. I saw your Kerva HaHala. The closest city. Yeah. Provided that the statistically improbable occurrence will be that you have a bunch of cities, more than one city, which have the largest population, but those two have the same. Two or more have the same.
And literally the census count comes out to the same amount?
Very difficult. Yeah. In other words, and the Rambam, by omitting the Gemara's of Kimti of Shevis Ben Haram, the question remains, what happened to Kulei Alma? Shemi?
Not really supposed to be doing a census of Jews, how do you even know which city has the biggest population?
So you're allowed to take the Ramban in Parshas Kisisa. If there's a Tzorah, so then they would take a Melech Pesach Shekel. They could do that. I mean, asking the question is so obvious. And the Rambam does ask him that, So without the ukimta of saying Yosheves Bein Haharim, according to the Rambam, Hadron Koshul L'Dochta. I just want to know for the Rambam, if you don't say the Yosheves Bein Haharim, how do you decide How do you decide when the Karov brings versus when you say that it's the Rov?
Forget why he leaves out. Forget why he leaves it out. When, according to the Rambam, if you don't have the Sukkimta, and if you have two cities, and one is a Rov, and one is a Karov, the Rov brings, there's always going to be a bigger city in the world. I guess Shanghai is going to bring every Egla Rufa. So, what is the Rambam thinking? Everybody else can say regional. Okay, you know, it's reasonable to say that's probably not Shanghai, even the Rambam without saying that. But the biggest city in Eretz Yisrael, as Yerushalayim doesn't bring either, Tosfos point this out, and he's bothered by why you need a Pasuk. This is not one we're going to talk about. Tosfos asks the question, why do you need a Pasuk to tell you that Yerushalayim doesn't bring an Egla Rufa? Why do you need a Pasuk? Yerushalayim would never bring Egla Rufa because Yerushalayim has such a large number of pilgrims and visitors that in all probability the murderer didn't come from Yerushalayim. So why would you need a Pasuk to tell you that you don't bring? Yerushalayim doesn't bring. And the answer he gives is Bimei Chizkia, when basically the only Jews, I'm not sure if this is Pshat, but the only Jews left in Eretz Yisrael were those Yerushalayim because everything else had fallen to Sancheirit. Or, I forget what the other situation was. But bottom line is, Tosfos has to give that type of a teretz. Or, he says, maybe there were places, there were neighborhoods in Yerushalayim no visitors ever went to. I don't know what those would be, but, you know, maybe there's some enclaves in, I don't know, Mea Sharim that the visitors are afraid to go to, or some other place. I have no idea, but that's what Tosfos says. So it's very strange, but I'm not going to go further on that now. Okay, so the Gemara has dealt with the question of Eglah Rufa. Josh?
Maybe this is a question for you, but at what point are we dealing with, like, legitimate probability reduction, and at what point are we just making decisions?
Well, again, on our own we would have said, and that was Tosis's, I would say, how, I mean, but Tosis's observation that the Karov, like Eglah Rufa, you would have thought was just a Hanhaga. And yet, the Gemara, by comparing it to Rov and saying that Rov beats Karov, is suggesting it's actually a Birur. Because if it were just a Hanhaga, then that's Xeris HaKasa that you follow the Karov, who cares how big the city is. But the fact that the Gemara asked the Kasha about that you bring the Egla Rufa from the Karov, assuming even though there would be a Rov and it would be winning, Satosa says the whole question and the answer to the Gemara presumes that Karov is in fact not a Hachra, but it's actually a Birur. And that's the problem. Okay, so now the Gemara comes back to our Mishnah. What is Rabbi Chanina doing here? Obviously because of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Tanan, Nipul Hanimsa Betocha Mishim Amar Reu Shabala Shovach. So now the Gemara says, Afal Gavdi Tachvina Benafashmine. In other words, there will be Shovachim outside of the 50 Amos, but as Tosas says, Rashi doesn't, within Shloshim Ris, within 30 Ris, so they could fly there. And there are far more pigeons in the radius of 30 Ris than there are pigeons in this Shovach. So nonetheless, we go back to the Shovach because of Karov. So Karov Arov, Karov Adah. Now, the Gemara... Now here, by the way, Shimi, is where Tosfos actually steals your concept. I'm talking too much. Scratch that. He does, but I'm not supposed to do that. So I'm just going to move on. So the Gemara says, no, but the Lecha. There are no, the way Tosfos says, and I'm going to just be selective now because I want to do the Gemara B'Iyun really carefully tomorrow, hopefully starting tomorrow. The Gemara says there are none, Tosfos says there are no Shovachim within 30 Ris. So then the Gemara says, Ihachi ema seifa chutz mechamishim ama harei shemotzao. The e bidaleka vaday behunafa. Now, how do you explain the seifa of the Mishnah? If the Mishnah is a case where there are no shavachim, any other shavachim within 30 ris, so then why, if it's found outside of 50 amos of the shavach, why is it belong to the person who finds it? Obviously, it only two choices. It came from some shavach elsewhere, or it came from this Shovach. So the Gemara says, the Gemara answers, Hacha b'mayaskinan b'midad. Now, it's a hatchling. It cannot fly. it cannot move, as the Gemara says, more than 50 amos. And therefore, when it's within 50 amos, it's presumed to come from that shovach. In fact, it has to come from that shovach. There's only one way it couldn't come from that shovach. You know what that is? If someone from walking through dropped their knee pole there. Tosis asked the question, why don't we assume that? And Tosis says, we don't assume that it was from over and b'shavim, unless there's evidence that it was dropped. If the bird could have just as well walked from the shovach there, we don't assume that it was from over. But once we know it's not from over, so the choice is, was that the guy who owned the shovach carrying his pigeon and dropped it outside, his dove, and dropped out 50 amos? Or did a majority of the world, someone from there, drop it? And the answer would be, we presume that the majority of the world. So that's why within 50 amos, it belongs to the Baal HaShovach, because it must have come from there. We don't assume someone dropped it. Outside of 50 amos, we know it didn't walk from the Shovach. It must have fallen from somebody's possession. That's the only way the bird could have gotten there. And therefore, we assume it fell Meruba Da'alma. And therefore, since we have no idea where it came from, Hareu Shemotzo. It has no simen, presumably. There's Yeosh, etc. Boy Rav Yirmiya, for entertainment, Rago Achas Betocha Mishamam, Rago Achas Chutzcha Mishamam Amahu. Yes, what happens if the bird's got one armor within 50 feet, one armor outside of 50 feet? And the Gemara says, V'aldap, Kuala Rav Yirmiya Mibay Midrasha. They threw him out of shear for that. You're out. The larger point of Rav Yirmiya did tshuva. Tosas quotes it, but doesn't quote the full thing. Tosas, we showed him what was so bad about the question. Rashi said it was because he was being a nudnik. But Tosas said, what do you mean? The Gemara asks always kinds of questions about things on the line. So the Gemara said, because they knew that it never put even one foot outside of 50 amma, because komi dasan shachachamim kachim. That's the way it works. How do you know that a mikvah is 40 sah? I mentioned that before. 40 sah. What's the basis of the 40 sah? Is that it's mayim shakol gufu shal adam ola behem. It's an amma by amma by 3 ammas. Like, you could fit into that box. So I have a question for you. I can make a mold of one of you. Let's say make a mold of Paul. And we'll fix it into the ground. And you'll just lie down in this little, you know, indentation in the ground. And we'll pour water on you until you hold your breath. Until it's above your head, you are completely immersed in the water, and it's not going to be 40 sides less than that. The answer is, on the basis of what a typical person could be told with an entire body, and they fixed it 40 sides, that's a dindo raisa, but they fixed the shear, that's the chamzat, and that shear is for everybody. Right? We say, barbayim sahu tova, barbayim sah chasav kurtaveno tova. Who is the author of that statement in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, if I'm not mistaken? Rav Yirmiya. Someone else had asked a question about Havar Shlish, and he told them, he gave Musa, you see, he did tshuva. Right? But here he was being the nunnik who refused to accept that there's always got to be a line. And the truth is, Tosis is right on some level, because you know what? If there were a question about, if one amma, one foot in and one foot out, was still considered in, you know what the Gemara would have said? 50 amos and one bird foot. That's what it would have said. The Mishnah's trying to give you a line. So you're telling me, when the Mishnah could have given you a point at which you know that the chicken could be, that the dove could be inside, let the Mishnah give you the proper line. Right? For 50 amos, if one foot in, one foot out, is not the proper shear. It's 50 amos plus one chicken foot. So they threw him out. Very nice. So now the American continues Tashma. They did let him back into the Beis Medrash, by the way. So near the end of the Misachtos. You know why they let him back into the Beis Medrash? Fundamentally, because they needed him. You have to be very careful about that. There's a Gemara in Moed Katan. It's coming up in Daf in a few days. It's on, I think, Daf Yud Zayin, where there was a Talmud Chacham who had a bad reputation personally. It's a big Talmud Chacham. And Rabbi Huda wasn't sure what to do with him. Because on the one hand, they should have put him in Chayrim. On the other hand, they needed him. And one of the Amorim said, the Pasuk in Malachi, Kisistechon Yishwudas, Sori Yavav Shemipu, Ki Malach Hashem Tzvakosu. If the Rav is Doma Lamalach Hashem Tzvakos, if his behavior is proper, he's ethical, he's appropriate, then you can learn Torah from him. Otherwise, you shouldn't bother learning Torah from him. So they put him in Chayrim. The Gemara goes on in that story. But the Havamina of accepting someone who was ethically compromised or religiously compromised just because he knew a lot of Torah was because they needed him. So Rav Yirmiya was not ethically compromised. He was just, they got thrown out on nudnik grounds, so they realized they should put up with his nudnikness because they actually needed him. You have a similar concept that Gemara has in Horios. in brief, Rabbi Nassan and Rabbi Meir were not happy with the Nasi Rav Shimon Gamliel. And so they set up a coup. They tried to embarrass him by asking questions in Uksan. And I'm not going to go through the whole story, but basically they tried and they failed, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel realized what they had done. So they threw him out of the Beis Medrash. And the problem was, every time they had a question they couldn't answer, they had to send it outside the Beis Medrash for a mayor or Nassan to answer. So they finally said, Torah anu mi'mifnim, Torah mi'bachutz, that doesn't work. So they let them back in, but they punished them that from then on in, Rabbi Nassan would be quoted, he wouldn't quote their name, their shittas by name, Rabbi Nassan would be a shomer, and Rabbi Meir would be a chayr. So again, you have that similar idea that you needed them, so that's why they let Rabbi Yirmiyah back in. But you can do that when people are not fundamentally, religiously, or ethically compromised. You know, if they made a mistake or they broke the nudnik rule. But anyway. Okay, so now the Gemara says, I know that some of you have heard this Gemara quoted from me many times about Rav Yirmiyah, and now you finally see it in the flesh. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. Tashma nimsa ben shtei shavachos karv lezeh shalov karv lezeh shalov afal gav dechad minayim nafesh mechavrei. The Gemara says the impossible ukimta. It's impossible, as you'll see as when you read on the Mishnah. But the Mishnah says you go vasa the karov. So the Gemara says, and might that not even be when one of these two shavachas has more than the other, so it's closer to one, but the other one has more? The Gemara says no. Hachem ha'askina sheshneim shavim, which Tosfos points out has to be that way. You know why? Because the last line in the Mishnah. If it's nimtz, it's mechtal mechtal sheshneim yachloku. If we're mechtal mechtal, there's no karov, and one of them were a rov, of course you would follow, everybody would agree you follow the rov in that situation. So Tosfos points out that the Gemara on other grounds could have proven that it had to be a case where they're shavim, because otherwise the last line in the Mishnah made no sense. So now the Gemara asks the question, I'll even spill a few beans for you here if you saw Rashi. Rashi and Tosfos both say the Gemara did not ask this kasha on the Lekka on the first turrets of the birds in the Mishnah. Tosfos explains why the Gemara couldn't have asked it. Rashi says the Gemara could have, but it had other questions to ask. And Ramban, when he gets to the end of his explanation of the sugya, Ramban says, no, this is the Gemara asking it. It waited until it finished both things. Then the Gemara said, hold on. In the first case where you said the Daleka, there are no other roves within Chamishamama, or outside of Chamishamama. And in this case, where there are no other roves with these two, compared to these two Shavas, the Ramban says, the Gemara waited to ask the question, and it's asked the exact same question as it asked on Egal Rufo, which is Vamezo Basaru of Dhamma. Just see who has the biggest chicken coop. Dove coop. I was started to say something before, by the way, I forgot to finish the thought. What does it mean, a rove? So a rove could be the largest, or a rove, which would be ridiculous, could be the majority. But if you take a majority, if you take rove as a majority, you have a problem. You know why? Because unless, as a computer person, you should appreciate this in binary. Add one digit to the left and give it a one, and you know that that number is more than the sum of all the digits before everything before that, right? In other words, let's say I have 10 cities numbered from 1 million to 2 million to 3 million to 4 to 10 million. There would never be an Egla Rufa if you require an absolute majority, because you would require one city that had approximately 28 million people in it, more than half of 55, the rove, compared to... In other words, if it's all about probability, it probably came from this city. Well, if I have a 10 million city, a 9 million city, etc., to 1 million... You can't say there's a rove probability that it came from the 10 million person city. There's a greater chance it came from the 10 million person city than the 9 million, but there's less of a chance it came from the 10 million person compared to the 9 and the 8 million together. It really creates an absolute mess. One of the Rishonim somewhere I saw this comes up, either in Rishonim, one of the footnotes or something. It's really, really difficult, right? What does that even mean? What does rove mean here? Because rove doesn't mean there's a greater than 50% probability that came from that thing. You have to add up all the other ones. It really means the most probable. Okay. This is very interesting, Sugya. Okay. So now the Gemara answers, what do you do with the Ruba Dalma? Hacha b'mayaskinan b'shviel shel kramim. The Ramban says this is the end of the answer. Shviel shel kramim is like Bein Aharim. Yosheves Bein Aharim. But all the other Rishonim have the gear, says we do. So the way Rashi explains and Tosfos explains is the case where it actually is more than 50 amas. But do you know why it can go more than 50 amas? Because if it's in a shvil, if it's in krumim, in vineyards, it feels protected, it will move a little more away, but provided that it can see its shovach. And here you're dealing with two shovachim that are the only ones that the bird can see, more than outside of the 50 amos of both. And even though, or it could be inside the 50 amos of both, either way, but any other shovachim in the world, even if they're within 50 amos, they're all within 50 amos, the birds can't see the other shovach, because the kerim blocks it, and therefore you know it has to come from one of these two shovachas. Okay. Now, we have the most problematic part, which I'm going to fly through, because this is an exceedingly difficult gemara. We might have to talk about it. I've chosen to skip over it, even in Iyun. I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but it's a very difficult gemara for a very simple reason. The Mishnah Nida presents anatomy of a woman, and the anatomy is very problematic. In other words, it doesn't correspond to any known woman today. And that's a little problem. It's a well-known problem. If you look at the Rambam's interpretation and the way Rav Kapach tries to explain the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayos, in accordance with modern anatomy, he acknowledges in the footnotes, he's explained the Rambam this way to make it inform. He knows those who think that none of this corresponds to human anatomy. It's a wrong explanation. So it's just too difficult to deal with because the anatomy is wrong, and you can talk about within the anatomy, but I'm not sure that even we understand the wrong anatomy. But in a nutshell, this is the way they describe it. The Mishnah says, Mashal Mashal Chacham Be'isha, there's a cheder, there's a prosdar, and there's an aliyah. The way they see it is, if I should have brought a marker, is you have a cheder here. The blood that, we would say it's the uterus, the blood that comes from the cheder is tamid. It's the right color red. There's a prosdar, which would be the cervix or the vaginal canal, or both, which is the prosdar, is the corridor. And then on top of the two, or on top of the corridor, is the aliyah. Now, what is this aliyah? I don't know. Because there are two possibilities I can think of. It's either, and I don't think it's the case, the bladder, or it's the ovaries and the fallopian tubes. Now, as you well know, the ovaries and the fallopian tubes empty into the uterus, which empties into the cervix. But they envision this, there's a thing, there's an aliyah on top of the prosdar, and there's a lobe, there's a little like a trap door. So blood can eat, sometimes blood can come from the aliyah, and that blood is tahor automatically. Or blood can come from the cheder, it's assumed it's the right color, let's assume it's all one of the right colors of red or black, is tamei. So the assumption of the Mishnah says the following. Amar Abaye, Afanan Namitina, we have a proof for Rav Chanina. Dam Shenimsa Bepruzdar Sveiko Tamei, Shecheskaso Min Hamakor. The Afagav, the Ika Aliyah, the Mekarva. So I'm going to read without Tosis for the moment. What this means is the following. You find blood in the prosdar towards the outside of the body. Meaning, here's the cheder, here's the aliyah with a lul, here's the entrance. So basically, you find the blood over here in the prosdar. So what do you have here? Well, rov damim min hamakor, but the aliyah is closer. And therefore, what's the din? It says sveiko tamei, but it means vadai tamei. It means the safek, because you're not sure where the blood came from, we treat it as vadai tamei, shecheskaso min hamakor. The afagav ed abaye, the aliyah, ik aliyah, the mekarva. The aliyah is closer, the blood would be tahar, we say vaday tamei, because rov et karov, you go basa the rov. Ama le rava, rovu matzer kamris? No, rovu matzer lekam nandanoid. Now the Gemara is going to say ultimately rava rejects this teretz, but it's really interesting teretz. We'll have to talk about it, what it means conceptually, but he says something that is both a majority statistically and matzoi is really, really common. Apparently, very common to have blood from the makar. It's not so common to have blood from another number of frequency of occurrence, not just total volume, but frequency of occurrence. So then, for sure, we go basar. Roman matzoi for sure beats karov. Nobody would even dispute that. Then I'm going to read just to keep it simple without the dalit. Tani Reb Chiya dama nimsa beprosdar chayav and alav bias mikdash usar fil and satruma. Reb Chiya says that if you find down in the prosdar, this is not a safek tuma. If it were safek tuma, and you became tameh that way, and then you entered the mikdash, you wouldn't bring a karban, because it'd be a safek of chulin ba'azara, and that whenever you're a safek with your chayav achatas or not, you don't bring it. And he says you burn truma over it, and you generally, except with certain six exceptions, when you have a safek tuma, you don't burn truma on it, you just put it aside. It's lo ochlin velo sorfin. So that's what Reb Chiya said. Amar Rava, Shmami Mad Reb Chiya, Tlas. We learned three things. Shmami Na, Ro Bekarav Halachacha Ro. Shmami Na, Ruba Daraisesh. And Shmami Na, Isa Rav Zera. The three things we see from it are the following. Number one, when you have to choose between Rov and Karov, you choose Rov, and this is Vadai. It's a Vadai, not just a Safek. Number two, that robe is the Raisa. Tosa says, Ruba the Lisa come on. Even Ruba the Lisa come on is the Raisa. And number three, we see that Rav Zeir is correct. Amar Rav Zeir, Afal Pisha Dalsos Ndina Ulos. Rav Zeir said the following. This is a case that's going to occupy Tosis. It's a very important case. I have 10 butcher shops selling meat. 9 of them have a Tudat Kashrut, says the Mahadran and Mahadran. One of them has a no Tudar. It has a Tudat that says it's Glat Treif. And then you find a piece of meat, let's say, in the middle. Now, I'm going to leave aside the question Karu for the moment. Let's assume it's equidistant just for now. What's the halacha? The halacha is if I find it in the middle, if I didn't go in and buy it from the store, it's not a kavua, but rather it's a parish. It's just, we find it there in the middle, you follow a rove. Now, based upon a discussion in Ksubas, which we'll talk about, in Eon, there was, in some cases we require a double rove. It would have to be that a rove of meat being sold in the surrounding region is kosher, and the rove of these butcher shops are kosher. Rabbi Zeira says, nothing doing. Even though the Ndalsis, Medina, and Ulos, the city gates are closed, it could only have come from one of these 10 butcher shops, that rove is sufficient to be makif. Other cases require double rove. One case in particular, but generally you don't. So the Gemara says that this fact that we follow this rove, even the kula, to bring a karban, shows you that Rav Zeir is correct. Why? Because the ha'isha v'chinalsus n'dina n'ulos da'amef v'afilach v'kos n'im basaruba. A woman, the blood in this situation, there's no outside blood that can come in. It's either from the cheder or from the aliyah. Rove and karov, you follow a rove. It's a single rove, and you bring a karban over it, which means it's not just a chumrah. It's even me'ikar hadin. Okay, now coming back to a little more, without having to deal with those problems. So the Gemara just asks, the harava hu dekama, rova matsui. How can you learn from Rav Chiya that rova karov, you go basa rove? Rava said earlier to be docha ba'ez raya that rova matsui, everybody agrees to follow a rova matsui. So the Gemara answers, hadar be rava, Rava backed out of that. He decided that Rova Matsuri is not a relevant category. Okay. Did it make any sense to you? I want to ask you a question. If it made any sense to you, I have a simple question, Rami. How is this a case of Rova and Karov? Tell me something. When you have blood that comes out of the makar, how does it get out of the woman's body? That's the only way it can come out. So why is karov even remotely shayach here? Who cares that it's physically closer? All blood of the makar comes out through the prosda. It's not like the blood of the cheder has another way to get out. But most of it comes through this way. It has to come through this way. Why is the principle of Karov even relevant?
Well, if there's blood that's closer to the opening but not further back, this goes.
It's but you're right. Yeah, that's why I started first. But it's got to pass that way anyway. Right? In other words, at the end of the day, all Dam Hamakar will wind up in the outer part of the prisoner. What's going on here? Tosus is aware of the issue for multiple reasons and deals with it on a pshat level. It's exceedingly difficult. I wish I could read Rav as saying that when he says Matzor, but I don't think there's any way to read that in there. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Itmar, Chavish Yitzaf of the Nohar. If you have a barrel of wine that all of a sudden shows up, full wine, floating in the river. Amarav, Nimtzeis Keneged Ir Sheruba Yisrael, Mutter Keneged Ir Sheruba Nachar Masira. Rav says that if you see it floating in the river, not moving too fast, by a city, that, let's say, like it gets into the side of the river, which kind of holds it in for a little bit. If most of the city is Jewish, the wine is kosher. If most of the city is not Jewish, the wine is not kosher. You assume it belongs to someone who's a member of the majority of the city. Shmuel Amar Afilo Nimtzeis Beneged Ir Sheruba Yisrael Asira Y Amor Meihi Dekira Asai. Shmuel says even if it's next to Ir Sheruba Yisrael, there are cities upstream that are majority not Jewish, and we assume it came from the majority. So the Gemara suggests. Maybe they argue about whether you follow the rov, like Shmuel, or the karov, like Rav. So the Gemara says, "Lo, the chulei alma islehu the Rabbi Chanina, v'hacha v'hacha makav." The Mar Savar and Isa the Mei the Kirasai akulei pshuri having the tavila. It would have been drowned either by the little whirlpools, or it would have been caught up somewhere, and it wouldn't have flowed downstream. That's Rav's position. So really, you should follow a Rov, but here, you know, it's probably not from the Rov. The Rov has been undermined. And Shmuel says, no, the other one says, Nar Savar, Harifa Denara Nokar Fasoi, it got stuck in the middle of the river, and that's why it flowed all the way down. Okay, then the Gemara says, Hahu Chatzva the Hamra, there was a barrel of wine, Ishtakach Bepradisa the Orla. You know what, actually, I'm not going to push on here, because I want to give this due attention. So what we'll do tomorrow in Shir is we will begin here just to finish off the Gemara, and then we're going to start to go back. I think what I'd like to do, the order I gave you the Makoros, but I'd really like to do really the first big Tosfos to set up the idea of Korga L'Mucha and Korga L'Mucha, and then I wanted to try to read it through the Sugya. How each step of the Sugya follows. Once we're done with all that, then we can go back and deal with the Rambam and Egla Rufa. So finish, if you haven't finished, finish the end of the Gemara, and then you can start to go through the Makoros. You can do the basic introductory ones, just introduction about how you know you follow a Rov and so on, but it's really this Tosfos on Rov that I would like to focus on, the big one on Chaf Gimel Beis, sort of as the jumping off point in the discussion. Any questions? About this?